Yeah, thank you very much. So let me talk about our study of some G2 manifolds making use of conformal free theory techniques. So let me first try to motivate the study of these special kind of manifolds. So we know that the standard way of realizing four-dimensional n is equal to 1 supersymmetric theories has been to study, to look at the hydrotic string theory compactified on Calabi-Yau threefolds. So this is it's been extensively studied during the 80s. So what's special about Calabi-Yau threefold is that the manifold has reduced holonomy. So the ordinary compact three-dimensional manifold has holonomy U3, but in the case of Calabi-Yau manifold, U1 part of the curvature is sort of missing. So the holonomy group is reduced to SU3. And because of that, there exists some special fields, special forms on these manifolds. So there are holomorphic three forms on Calabi-Yau threefolds. And there exists also covariant constant spinor fields. And the existence of covariant constant spinor fields imply the NH1 supersymmetry after the theory is compactified on such a manifold. So this leads to space and supersymmetry. So now, recently, sort of new version, or sort of updated version of hydrotic compactification Calabi-Yau threefold has emerged. Namely, we try to go to one dimension higher. So look at the 11-dimensional theory, M theory, now compactified on 7-dimensional manifold rather than 6-dimensional manifold. And we look at the particular case of, again, of a reduced holonomy. So in the standard case of 7-dimensional real manifold, we have SO7 holonomy. But now suppose the holonomy is reduced, so to subgroup of SO7. And the in particular, for instance, if you look at the case with G2, so this is a so-called G2 manifold. The condition which corresponds to the existence of Calabi-Yau, the holomorphic three form in the case of Calabi-Yau manifold, is the existence of a special kind of three form. I think it's called associative three form in the case of G2 manifolds. So here phi is, I think I'm using a simplified notation, dx1 to 7 means dx1 which, dx2 which, dx7, etc. And let's say there are these 7 terms. And this object is not invariant under the total SO7, but it's left invariant under G2. So this is the characteristic sort of feature of G2 holonomy manifold. So so again, in the case of G2 complication, we have one covariant constant spinor field left in the system. So in four dimensions after complication, we have n=1 space and supersymmetry. So this proposal has been looked at. It's quite interesting. That seems also somewhat difficult. And so in the case of Calabi-Yau manifold, which is complex, which is a Keller manifold, so we can use complex analysis. But in the case of G2 manifold, it's a real manifold. And so we have only real kind of real analyticity, which is much weaker than complex analyticity. So let's see. So the study has been sort of rather limited. And so what is known is the following. If the G2 manifold is smooth, as it turns out, we could have only abelian gauge symmetry. So this case is presumably not interesting from physics point of view. In the case of M theory, we have three index fields. When which is compactified on two cycles, we get U1 gauge field, vector field. So there are B2 U1 gauge fields, but they are just abelian fields. And if a free form fields is compactified on three cycles, we get chiral fields, but they are neutral under these gauge fields. So we have just a bunch of U1 gauge fields and neutral Newton masses particles, and so they are not quite interesting from physics point of view. So it seems that we should consider a singular G2 manifold of a very specific type so that we have nonlinear engagement and also charged matter fields in the system. So in the following, we try to use the technique of conformal field theory in order to probe the geometry of these manifolds. So I'm not sure if we are, all of us are familiar with these G2 manifolds, sort of a little bit exotic from the standard physics point of view. So let me give you one simple example of quotient construction done by a mathematician Joyce. So in this case, so this is a particular example of compact G2 manifold constructed by the Obifold technique. So we start from seven-dimensional torus T7 and try to divide by three different types of G2s. Let me call them as alpha and beta and gamma. And the analysis goes in the following way. So the first G2 transformation alpha takes seven of these coordinates into these. Namely, I flip four of these coordinates, x1 to x4, and the rest remain unchanged. So if I divide by this Z2, the original T7, then this part, as we know, if I divide by R4 by Z2, then I get a singular version of K3. This is, say, A1 type ALE space times T3. So this is definitely invariant, so K3 times T3. Then we further divide by the second Z2 action, and the second Z2 action is defined the following way. Now, the minus sign appears in a different place, so x1, x2, x5, and x5, x5 and x6 flip sign, and b1, b2 are shift constants, so they could be 0 or 1/2 depending on the model. So let me not worry about this b1, b2, just ignore them. Then we see that if I combine this x1 and 2 into convex variable z1, z1 flip sign, x3 4 into z2, z2 unchanged, then this t2 changes sign, 5, 6 goes to minus 5 and 6, and this part is left invariant. So what happened is that at this stage I have constructed k3. Now let me introduce two complex variables for the coordinate of k3, then one of the complex coordinate flip sign, and the coordinate of T2 flip sign. So the second Z2, what the second Z2 does is that I take K3 times T2 and divide by this particular Z2. And it's known that such construction gives a Carbial manifold. K3 times T2 divided by Z2 gives a particular, this is something which is called self-mirror Carbial manifold, I think, which features in some. Shift, yes. I'm ignoring. Let me ignore the shift at the moment. And these shifts come in the end in order to, let's say, if I don't have this shift in the end, I cannot resolve the singularities. And so Joyce had a clever choice of B1, B2, etc., so that in the end I can resolve the singularities. But let me ignore that for the moment. So first stage is K3. The second stage is Carbial. Then the last one, gamma, flip sign of, again there's a shift, possible shift C1 and C3. I flip sign of X1, 3, 5, 7. So if I combine 1, 2 into complex variable Z1, 3, 4 into Z2, and 5, 6 into Z3, then let's say imaginary part flip sign, let's identify it this way. So Carbial 3, 4, that's three complex variables. Z1 now goes into Z1 star. And the last coordinate, X7, also now flip sign. So here, I have constructed Carbial. Then I have Carbial, let's see, I have anti-homomorphic involution, complex conjugation process hitting Carbial part, and the flipping sign of S1, and that is this division Z2. So if I take Carbial 3 times S1, divided by Z2, this gives the Z2 holonomy manifold. And, well, then in all these processes, I generate singularities. In the end, I want to resolve the singularities. For that, these shift parameters has been adjusted in a clever way. Let's see, if you just look at the last step of this division. So I'm taking complex conjugation of three Z variables and flipping the sign of one of the real variables, X7. Then the type of singularity occurs is the following. So I have three complex variables, and I'm looking at the complex conjugation. Then the fixed point of this Z2 operation is all yi is equal to 0, 1 to 3. And the additional real variable flipping sign, so y4 is equal to 0. So four of these variables vanishes. So this is, in fact, a one-type singularity. So four real variables divided by Z2, so the singularity is at the origin. A conventional four singularity. So this is a one-type singularity. So this kind of singularity appears, and we know how to sort of resolve them by using ALE space and etc. So actually, this singularity is from physics point of view is interesting. So a one singularity we know is able to generate a C-type, a C2-type gauge theory. So in the case of G2 manifold, if we don't have these singularities, originally it seemed that we have only U1 to the power on the abelian gauge symmetry, but because of these singularities, it's possible to generate non-abelian gauge symmetries. So physically, from physics point of view, presumably the interesting situation is we want to have a three-dimensional base manifold. So total space is seven-dimensional, so three-dimensional base manifold, and we have ALE space, four-dimensional ALE space. And so it's a kind of hybridization of ALE space over some three-dimensional base. Then, depending on the choice of the ALE space, we should be able to generate ADE-type gauge symmetry. So this is a way of trying to extract physics out of these G2 manifolds. So in the rest of this talk, let me go to a different type of G2 manifold, namely non-compact type. So this was the compact type. And let me go to non-compact type of a very special kind, specific kind, namely non-compact manifold with special holonomy over a certain cone. So here, I have a total space X, which is d-dimensional. And the whole thing has a structure of the cone. So I have a base y, which is d minus one dimensional, then there's a radial direction small r. And just by definition, so the metric of the total space x is given by simply by the sum of flat metric in r direction times the metric of the base y. So this is the so-called cone construction. Actually, in this construction, the singularity occurs at the origin. So sometimes we want to resolve eliminate the singularities. But for the moment, I don't care about the singularity. I just let the singularity stay there. And in the latter part of the talk, I try to discuss possible perturbations which remove these singularities. But for the moment, let me not worry about the removing these singularities. So now, we want the total space X to have a very special holonomy, set of holonomies. For instance, in the case of D is equal to 8, if the total dimension is 8, there are, let's say, typically three different types of holonomies possible. So 8 dimensions, we can have, say, Calabi-Yau fourfold, which has holonomy SU4, or actually the holonomy may be SP2, this is hyperkerta, or the holonomy may be SP7. Actually, there are maybe SU3 and etc. There are other possibilities, but not going to that. So we could imagine, in the case of D is equal to 8, we want to construct our special holonomy manifold of these kinds on some cone Y. But now it's known from classical geometry that if we want X to have a special holonomy, then there is a corresponding condition on the geometry of Y, of the base manifold. And in the case of hyperkerta manifold, the base has to be something which is called a tri-Sasakian manifold. And this is almost by definition, I think, of tri-Sasakian manifold. And in the case of Calabi-Yau manifold, then the base manifold, so this is the seven-dimensional space, and this is seven-dimensional space also, which is called Sasaki-Einstein manifold. Okay? And in the case of spin 7, so the total space has spin 7 holonomy, then the base manifold, six-dimensional base manifold, should have a so-called weak G2 structure, etc.
What do you mean by weak G2?
Weak G2 is the three form is not annihilated, it's not zero, but it's proportional to the dual, some constant. If C is equal to zero, this is G2, but this is sort of weak because of that. So it's a slightly relaxed condition of weak G2. Weak SU3 is a bit like that. So there are no homomorphic three form. So the bar doesn't vanish, it's something else. It's written in terms of, right. Something like that. Yes. Some weaker condition. So in the case of dimension 7, so if we want the total space as G2 holonomy, then the base manifold has supposed to have this weak SU3 structure. So the base manifold is six-dimensional. Then it's a bit like Calabi-Yau, you see, but it's a little bit weaker condition imposed. If you go to...
Does that correspond to having a metric where the Ricci tensor is proportional to the metric and not flat?
This side is Einstein.
They're all Einstein.
All Einstein, and this side is Ricci flat.
Wow.
All Einstein. Right. Basically, this side is more or less is always the homogeneous space, G by H structure. So if you go to six dimensions, so the total space is Calabi-Yau, so SU3 holonomy, but the base manifold is five-dimensional. So again, this is a five-dimensional version of Sasaki-Einstein. So this is seven-dimensional. Five-dimensional version of Sasaki-Einstein. So probably we are not quite familiar with this Sasaki-Einstein and tri-Sasakian. Actually, I'm not that familiar either. But what's known about them is the following. So in the case of tri-Sasakian, it's known that there is an SU2 symmetry in this system, so you can divide by SU2. So this is basically, then M over SU2 is one of these Wolf spaces, so the tri-Sasakian is interpreted as a C2 vibration over a Wolf spaces. Sasaki-Einstein manifold, on the other hand, has a U1, it can be divided by U1. Then after division by U1, we get Einstein-Kehler manifold. So this one is odd dimensional. If you divide, then we have an even dimensional object, and this is Einstein-Kehler. So in some sense, this space is interpreted as even vibration of Einstein-Kehler manifolds. So these are characters. So in the conformal field theory language, what happens is that when we have X or U1, the system has n is equal to 2, well, sheet supersymmetry. And if there is SU2, the system has n is equal to 4, well, sheet supersymmetry, etc. So the supersymmetry enhancement happens for these guys. So let me now come to the non-classical solutions of G2, so seven-dimensional G2 holonomy manifolds. These are the famous solutions by these authors, Brian, Solomon, Gibbons, Page, and Pope. So there are three known solutions. So the first one is to take the base manifold as CP3. The total space is cone over CP3 has holonomy G2, and it turns out in this construction CP3, the standard way of writing CP3 as a homogeneous space is SU4 divided by SU3 times U1, but that's no good for this purpose, as it turns out, then because it has a commitment to a particular complex structure. This is in this situation, this is weak SU3. Weak SU3 is not non-Kehler, so we shouldn't have a particular specific complex structure. And as it turns out, there's another different way of realizing CP3, is by SO5 divided by SO3 times E1. So we take this homogeneous space and do the Coase construction, then we have non-compact E2-Hamiltonian manifold. Another example is to take the base manifold, SU3 divided by U1 squared. OK, both of these are six-dimensional, right? So, so this is the second example. The third example is to take the base manifold as S3 times S3. And in all these solutions, these authors have discovered regular solutions. So they are possible to introduce additional parameter R naught so that the singularity is resolved, removed. So this region is removed. So R extends only up to R naught. And then this base manifold CP3 shrinks to S4 at the end. And these things are called so-called modes. So we have CP3. This is a sort of principal orbit, and the singular orbit is S4. So here, I also wrote down the so-called bolt. The total space is, in this case, I think, so we can say this is the bundle of SO4 of anti-symmetric, sorry, anti-Seudel 2 form or something. So we can interpret the structure. Total space in the following way.
So you could also construct Ricci flat cones by taking the base to the S4 process 2, for example.
For this one?
Yeah.
It doesn't work. I think these are the other cases. People tried all possible cases and so on. And
so it doesn't, it's Ricci flat, but you're saying it wouldn't have G2 holonomy. Yeah.
Sometimes you get a flat metric, I think. And
I think it's flat only if it's S6.
Okay. S6 is flat, and SO4 times SU2, S2, I don't know.
I think
it's
not flat, but it's probably just G2 volume.
It's not G2, probably, yeah, it's most likely it's not G2. So in the case of these good eight, so the non-solutions, so the base manifold is SO5 divided by SO3, which is actually S7. And then we can construct structure. And also SU3 divided by U1. This is our...
yes. One of them was S4?
S4. Which one?
The first one. Because it was
a bundle. Oh, yeah. But in that sense, it's right. CP3 is a twisted space of S4. So it's not a product, but it's
not swap.
It's not a product. Yeah.
Well, we could have taken just a straight product.
If it's straight product, probably the.
There are non-singular problems.
Oh, I don't know if it's, no, I don't know if you can resolve the singularity in that case.
Okay, so the. So the construction, the cone construction, basically you take G over H and try to construct the a special holonomy manifold by solving the Einstein equations. So we propose in this talk to mimic this construction using conformal field theory measures. So this is based on a recent paper with Sugawara and Yamaguchi, both English, Tokyo. So let me propose CFT cone models to study these geometries. So what we do is the following. So we have this radial direction, 0 to infinity. We replace them by a Liouville field. Liouville field is something which is strange, which is sort of lives on the half line. So we replace this part by the Liouville field. And everything has to be n is equal to 1, which is supersymmetric. So we have n is equal to 1 Liouville theory. So the Liouville scalar field phi and its partner, Fermionic partner, psi. So let me, yes?
So normally we can think sort of conformal field theories with, say, Calabi-Yau target spaces to study actual string propagation on these backgrounds.
Right.
But there's no strings in M theory. So this is just
motivation. This is not. Well, I think we should say this is type 2, rather than M theory.
Type 2. Strings.
Yes.
In that sense. On the manifold of G2
holonomy.
To three dimensions.
To three dimensions, right.
I see.
In a sense.
Yeah.
in a sense, yes, yes. But the primary motivation is try to study the geometry of these manifolds. So now the base manifold was G over H, but now we replace G over H by the current algebra G divided by H. So this is the CFT coset construction. Okay. So let me introduce a current algebra G of a certain level K, and divided by a current algebra H, which is a subgroup of G. It's a certain suitable corresponding level. It depends on the details, how K and this level is related. And we need n equal to 1 Rauch supersymmetry, so we introduce a corresponding number of free fermions. So dimension G minus dimension H is the dimension of homogeneous space. The base space, base manifold, is D minus 1 by definition. So let me introduce D minus 1 free fermions. So that generates SOD minus 1 level 1 kind of algebra. So this is the radial direction, and this is the base sort of degree freedom, and try to put together things and see what happens. So here I'm using the Liouville field. So the central charge, the sort of criticality condition is written in this way. So due to the presence of the background charge Q, there is an additional term. So the Liouville field central charge is 1 plus 3 Q squared, and Liouville fermion 1 half. And the conformal field theory, let me call this whole thing as CFT M, and theory M, and its central charge adds up to the standard sort of number, 3 halves times G. Then in this construction, the crucial question is, how do we impose a condition so that the whole thing has the right, say, holonomy? The total space has holonomy spin 7 from G2, or space-time supersymmetry in a different language. Okay, we want to have just one space-time supersymmetry. Sometimes we may have two space-time supersymmetry, maybe four space-time supersymmetry. So what is the condition in this construction to have the sort of prescribed number of space-time supersymmetry, or which fixes the holonomy of the total space? So let me consider D is equal to 8 situation. So the base was Y, 7-dimensional space, and this was supposed to have weak G2 symmetry. Then the base manifold in this approach is made of G over H, current algebra, a coset construction times 7 fermions, SO7. Then it turns out that if this, in our construction, if this is to correspond to the geometrical characterization, Y has weak holonomy G2, then the condition, it turns out, is the following. The denominator has to be included into G2 of level 1 current algebra. So this condition, as it turned out, the same as this condition. Vaguely speaking, roughly speaking, why this condition comes about is the following. So let's see. So let me multiply and divide by the same thing, G21 and G2 level 1, G2 level 1, upstairs, downstairs. If H is contained in this one, this makes sense. Of course, H is contained in G by definition, but now it's contained in G21, so this construction makes sense. But now SO7 divided by G2 is tricritical Ising model, I think. I don't know if we are familiar with this, but this is the old work by Chattopadhyay and Buffer. They have tried to characterize the CFT, which describes G2 holonomy manifold, and they said that the system must contain tricritical Ising model. The argument is we start from ordinary situation of SO7 holonomy, say. Then the holonomy is reduced to G2. Then this difference is the sort of dynamical degree of freedom, which sort of governs the G2 holonomy manifold. So this is, in fact, the tricritical Ising model. So this shows that, in fact, this whole space contains tricritical Ising model. So this space Y has weak G2 structure. So this amounts to this condition. H is contained inside G2. Actually, I can give a different sort of argument, but probably this is kind of the simplest way of arguing that this is presumably the right condition. If you go to d is equal to 7, then the base manifold is six-dimensional, and we claim that it has to be weak AC3 to have G2 total space holonomy. So now, the in our construction, so we have G over H times SO6, level 1, fermions, 6 fermions. Then the condition of having weak AC3 holonomy is that the denominator, again, is contained into inside AC3, level 1. And if this is the case, then we can divide and multiply sensing AC3 level 1. But now this structure is exactly the sort of the same as this one. In this case, ordinary case SO7, the holonomy is reduced to G2. Then we get the weak G2 holonomy. So here, ordinary holonomy of 60 million manifold SO6 is reduced to SU3. So this is weak SU3 structure. So we want to extract this part. So if H device is sort of, H is contained within SU3 level 1, so this makes sense. And then the claim is that this system, so if this happens, then this system describes with Y base manifold has weak SU3 holonomy. So altogether, the total space has G2 holonomy and just one space-time supersymmetry. Actually, we can construct explicitly this space-time supersymmetry operator.
Yes. The fact that H sits inside S3, is that the geometrical condition, or is that
a
condition that you derive?
From CFT point of view. So this is CFT counterpart of geometrical characterization.
Can you show that this is, in fact, necessary condition?
Necessary and sufficient condition. So in this case, we have one space-time supersymmetry operator.
Why don't you have SU3
more
if you have
weak
SU1?
Why
don't you have only weak SU2?
At the level of CFT, I think we don't distinguish weak or without weak. Yeah, there's no such distinction at this level. So just like tricritical Ising model sort of characterized weak G2 holonomy system, this object, actually the central charge, this system is 3 and this is 2, so this ratio gives center charge 1, so 1 just boson, so U1 boson with a certain level. And so this object characterizes the SC3 structure as it turns out. So now, what happens in the other cases where the symmetry is enhanced? So in these cases, from the Wall-C point of view, only N is equal to 1 supersymmetry. If you go to SUN holonomy, like Calabi-Yau manifold, what happens is the following. So start from Liouville times some base manifold, but if the base manifold is Sasakian, Sasaki-Einstein, then we said then it can be divided by U1. There's a vibration, U1 vibration over M over U1. So multiply and divide by U1. So this makes sense. And then here we have another U1 boson, compact boson, together with the Liouville field, and it turns out this is converted into n is equal to 2 Liouville system, starting from n is equal to 1 Liouville system. And this is now an even dimensional manifold, which is scalar. So the whole thing becomes has n is equal to 2 supersymmetry from Wall-C point of view, and space-time that corresponds to SUN type holonomy. Actually, there's some subtlety here. Actually, if you look at the n is equal to 2 Liouville theory, there is a compact boson, but the radius of the compact boson is related to this background charge of the Liouville system. So when you fix this part, the level of U1 factor is fixed by this construction, then that had to fit exactly with this formula, the background charge of the Liouville field. But it turns out this is the case in all the examples we have looked at.
How do you know that it's not a product with U1, but
twisted product? In a sense, it's twisted product, yes. Yes, actually, when we add the summation, sort of we pick up a state from here and there, we make a special pairing of the states. So in a sense, it's a twisted sort of construction. So SPN holonomy case, so suppose M was trisakian, Now, twice Sasaki and I said can be divided by SE2. So I multiply and I divide by SE2. Then together, this is now three additional scalar fields. So I have four scalar fields. This has now n is equal to four structure, Liouville theory. And this wall space has again n is equal to four, which is supersymmetry. So together, altogether, this is n is equal to four situation. And that corresponds in space-time supersymmetry is SP type. So roughly, so this is what's going to happen in this kind of construction. So let me now briefly look at the various cases of our construction of G2 manifolds. So the condition is simple. So we just take G over H, the difference of dimension is equal to 6. So G over H is supposed to describe six-dimensional the base manifold. Then we just look at the group theory table and come up with these examples. If the difference is 6, then SO7 divided SO6 is okay. This is again actually just S6. And this is CP3. And this is again G2 over C3 is a little bit strange, but it's known that this actually is 6. And SO5 divided by SO3 times E1, dimension 6. C3 divided by this flag manifold, this is dimension 6. And there's another example, 3 SU2s divided by 1 SU2, dimension 6, etc. Right? So we can go on forever, but let me just look at the set models. Then we have to test this condition, whether the denominator is contained in SU3. So the condition is this one. So if the denominator is contained in SU3 level 1, that's okay. So this gives the G2 manifold. So if you look at that, the first two examples is no good because, so this is actually S6 and this is CP3, but denominator is too big. SO6 is not contained in SU3. Actually, the other way around. And this is also too big. This additional U1 cannot be contained in SU3. So starting from this one, I cannot construct the G2 manifold. So this doesn't work. The simplest case, this one. So let me take G2 over SU3. So this is a little bit strange. But classically, this is S6 again. So in this case, these two are SU3. I'm confused with the other case. So this is SU3 level 1 and this is SU3 level 1. But now, sorry, so this is SU3 level K plus 1. SU3 level K part is contained in here. G2 contains SU3. So this part is contained here, and this is SU3 level 1, this part is contained here. So so this concept makes sense. And so in this way, we see that, in fact, in this case, there is a supersymmetry, and we have G2 manifold. We can go on and look at the case of SO5 divided by SO3 times E1. And it turns out there are two ways, actually, maybe three. There are no unique, we have to specify how SO3 is embedded into SO5. SO5 has long roots and short roots. So suppose SO3 is embedded along the long root of SO5. Then it turns out, if you look at the group theory data, then we find the level of SO3, SO5 is related in this way. Also, the level U1 is fixed this way. And therefore, the question was whether the denominator can be inside SU3, level 1. So this level K part is inside this one. So this one, so SU2, level 1 times SU1, level 3, whether this is inside SU3, level 1 is the condition, and it turns out this is, in fact, the case. So this stays inside SH level 1. So this model is okay, and so this describes G2 manifold. And actually, this seems very much to correspond to the classical solution with CP3, the base. So the cone construction of base CP3, this is one of the well-known classical solutions, seems to correspond exactly to this model. We can also embed SO3 along a short route of SO5. But if you do that, it turns out it doesn't work. So we do not generate the G2 manifold, the other choice. So we can also look at the SU3 divided by U1 times U1. So in this case, the condition is if this makes sense, so I multiply and divide by SU3, and if this division makes sense, so in order to that happens, the SU3 level 1 must contain level 3 of U1 and level 9 of U1 if this is true, and it's known that this is in fact the case. So in this case, in fact, the denominator is contained inside SU3. So this is again okay. And this seems to correspond to the classical construction using the flag manifold. That's this thing at the base. So the cone construction using the flag manifold. There's still another example we have looked at. So three SU2s divided by one SU2. And there are different ways of embedding this SU2 into these three SU2s. So if one of these SU2 is just the same as just one of these SU2s, they just cancel. So then we have something like this. Then there is no denominator. So we have to check that the denominator is contained in SU3, but if there is no denominator, there's no condition. So this is okay. So there are a lot of supersymmetry for this model. But this is not G2, but this is small supersymmetry. If SU2 is embedded into two of SU2 factors diagonally, as it turns out, it doesn't work. So there is no supersymmetry. This doesn't correspond to G2 manifold. If SU3 is embedded in all of them, so in this case, the level of SU2 goes like this, K1, K2, K3, K1, K2, K3 plus 4. So this is the case, and this is embedded into the Downer sum of all of these. So the problem is whether we can multiply and divide by SU3, so if this makes sense. So what we have to check is SU3, whether that contains, level 1 contains SU2 level 4, if this is true. And actually, it's known that this is true. SU2 level 4 is very much like SU3 level 1. The center charge is the same, and they're almost the same. So this construction works, so there is a supersymmetry. So there are different ways of embedding SU2. So there's the first example. Just one SU2 cancelled. There was a very high supersymmetry. So it looks like geometrically that corresponds to S3 times S3, round S3 times S3, and we have a very high supersymmetry. The last one is a kind of squash or deformed S3 times S3. So then the cone over this base has G2 holonomy, it seems. So we seem to reproduce the known classical constructions out of these methods. And let me see. Also explain some interesting, curious sort of facts about SO5 divided by SO7, SO3, I'm sorry. So this is seven-dimensional now. Depending on a different way of embedding SO3 into SO5, we get three different possibilities. Actually, it seems that this has been known in the old days of Katsa Klein compactification in the early 80s. So we sort of were deriving the probably most of the known thing. So if SO3 is embedded along the short root of SO5, it's known SO5 divided by SO3 is Grassmannian. You know, the two planes within the five-dimensional Euclidean space. In this case, we can further divide by U1 or SO2, right? So this space can be divided by U1. So that means that this is Sasaki Einstein. If this is Sasaki Einstein, the total space is Calabi-Yau fourfold. If SO3 is embedded into along the long route, it's known that this is S7, can be divided by SU2 and becomes S4. This is the Hopf 5 version. Then in this case, we have additional SU2. So, you know, we have n is equal to 4 or sheaf supersymmetry, and the space-time is a hyperkeller manifold. So this is the hyperkeller, this is Calabi-Yau. Then there's another one, which is rather peculiar. So SO3 is embedded into SO5 as a maximal subgroup. Very special way of embedding SO3 into SO5. It's a maximal subgroup. This has been studied in the old literature on Katsa-Klein compactifications. Then in that case, the level of these current algebra becomes very peculiar. Level of SU3 is like 5k plus 14. And so in this case, the total space is eight-dimensional. So the condition was if the denominator is contained in G2 or not. So this part is contained here. So if this part is contained there, that's the question. SO3 level 14 is SU2 level 28. So the question is SU2 level 28 is contained in G2 level 1 or not. And it's known that this is true. And SU2 level 28, 28 plus 2 is 30, and 30 is the dual Coxeter number of E8. And it's known that, you know, there is this E8 type modular special modular invariant. And it's known that E8 type special modular invariant is a diagonal invariant of G2. So in fact, it's almost the same thing. So in this case, it's okay. So this is contained inside G2, and then this gives spin 7 manifold. So different ways of embedding SO3 into SO5 gives all different varieties of eight-dimensional manifolds. So let me come in the last 10 minutes to the issue of perturbations. So far, I've been just looking at the singular situation. So the base and the cone, strict cone, and there's a singularity at the origin. So if we are able to sort of eliminate, remove these singularities, from the point of physics, maybe we don't have to remove the singularities. It's not quite clear that we are still worried about the singularities if there is a way of perturbing the system, preserving the special holonomy. And for that, we first have to look at the choice of the Lüge momentum. The Lüge field has this background charge, so the Lüge momentum has a rather peculiar feature associated with it. We know the conformal dimension of a vortex operator over the Lüge field with exponent alpha is given by this formula. The Q is the background charge, right? So if I form a complete squared, then we have a rest Q squared over 8. Then there are two possible range of the Lüge exponent alpha, which corresponds to principal series in SL2R theory and discrete series in SL2R theory. So the principal series corresponds to taking alpha is equal to minus q over 2 plus pi imaginary number. So p is real. So in this case, like a plane wave shifted by minus q over 2. So if I plug this in here, then the sign becomes plus. So half p squared plus q squared by 8. So this is bounded from below. Okay? So there's a gap. And there's a continuum, gap and continuum. So this is the spectrum of principal series. If you look at if you consider the case of alpha being real, then there are two domains which are distinguished. Whether alpha is bigger than minus q over 2 or smaller than minus q over 2, The one branch is called, in the old matrix model, this is the cyborg branch and this is anti-cyborg branch. I think the one of them is the non-normalizable states. If alpha is positive, this field is peaked at phi is equal to infinity, so in asymptotic region is peaked, so it's not normalizable. So in the sense, in this sense, they are called non-normalizable states. And if alpha is negative, so this is peaked in interior, so phi negative, so in that sense they are called the normalizable states. So we have to make a choice out of these values of Lebesgue momentum. Actually, as it turns out, when we try to construct modular invariant partition functions, we have to use this principal series. We have to choose the Lebesgue momentum from principal series. Okay? So that is the kind of obvious choice, because in this case, the system is unitary. It's bounded from below. And in this range, there is a problem. The conformal dimension becomes negative, more and more negative if alpha is large. So there is a problem, the unitarity. It's a subtle problem. So, and in the following, let me make a choice. Alpha is minus q over 2, just this critical value. Okay. So if alpha is minus q over 2, then let's say from this point of view, it hits the bottom. So it sort of saturates the BPS bound, sort of. And I'm trying to look for the Ramon ground state of this system. So I want to choose this value to hit the sort of BPS bound. So let me first look at the Ramon ground state of these systems. And then there is an argument, old argument by Shatashvili and Wafa. When there is a, because the system has the space-time supersymmetry, then out of these Ramon ground state, it's possible to construct the marginal perturbations in the NS sector. So let me first look at the possible Ramon ground state. So D is equal to 7 case, the G2 holonomy. So the center charge is given by this formula. This is N is equal to 1 Lebesgue field, and the conformal field theory M. Together, it's the match the standard center charge of 7-dimensional N is equal to 1 system. Divide by 24, the both sides. Then if we divide by 24, this becomes Q squared over 8. This becomes 1/16. This is C over 24 and 7/16. Then this is equal to, so the center charge divided by 24 is the bound. So this is the Ramon ground state, the total dimension Ramon ground state. So this says the Ramon ground state should be constructed out of three components. And from the CFT sector M, we should just take the Ramon ground state. Ramon ground state appears at C is equal to, H is equal to C over 24. So just choose from this G over H sector, from this sector, so this M sector, just choose the Ramon ground state. I'm using some symbol for that. So this one is this BPS value for the Lebesgue exponential, right? Because we have this bound. And this bound is saturated when alpha is minus q over 2. So so this part, I'm using this Lebesgue exponential with this critical exponent. Now 1/16 is the spin field, dimension of the spin field. And I have N is to 1 Lebesgue theory, so there's a Lebesgue fermion. The Lebesgue fermion has its spin field. So let me use the notation sigma of Lebesgue, the spin field, at this dimension. Then this formula suggests that, okay, so this should be the Ramon ground state of the total system. So I take this Lebesgue exponential and the spin field and the Ramon ground state of M sector of this system. I'm using the notation phi. But now, in order to find the Ramon ground state of this such a coset model, technique has been developed. And so what happened is that we just choose a particular representation from G, so big lambda, particular representation from H, small lambda, and S stands for the different representations of SL6, which is either vector, spinor, or singlet, etc. And S is equal to 1 corresponds to spinor representations. Let's take spinor, because it's a Ramon sector, has to be spinor. Then we can find lambda, big lambda and small lambda should obey a condition given by this formula. Actually, this was known in the case of NH2 theory. So the weight lambda of the denominator plus the so-called wild vector of the group G, length squared, is the weight lambda of the denominator plus a wild vector of denominator group H is the same. So this is the condition that we hit the bottom sort of C over 24 state. So this is just reduced to group theory problem. So, you know, given G and H, we can look at the table and enumerate all possible Ramon ground states. Then the claim is, given the Ramon ground state, there is a marginal perturbation operator. There's one correspondence. We can construct that. The way to construct the marginal perturbation is the following. So Ramon ground state had this form. So Liouville field and spin field and coset field, but with a spinor representation. So if you go to NS, then we should just replace spinor by a vector representation. And this, we just get rid of this spin field. We just throw away the spin field. So same Liouville exponential, and now no spin field. And I have replaced the spinor by a vector, because this is in the Ramon sector now. Then if you look at the dimension, then the original dimension was 7 over 16 in the Ramon ground state. Then it turns out, after this revision, H is equal to 1/2. So this is exactly the right dimension for marginal perturbations. And actually, it depends on the model, depends on the choice of G and H. We have sort of enumerated all possible Ramon ground state or the corresponding perturbations. It's very model dependent, so difficult to say how many there are with Ramon ground states. So the results of the search. So there are this model, 3SU3 divided by 1SU2. Sorry, 3SU2 divided by 1SU2 model. In this case, the number of Ramon ground state is equal to the greatest common divisor of K1 plus 2, K plus 2 plus 2, K3 plus 2, something like that, it turns out. So this is the number of possible perturbations of this system. This is the CP-based CP3 model. We have looked at so given the level K, computed the Ramon ground state, number of Ramon ground state, it increases like K squared. So in this case, it's irregular, because this is a great common divisor, it's irregular, but in this case, it increases as the level is increased. So this is a case which is not known geometrically, I think. This is S6, so the total space is G2 holonomy. So there's no classical counterpart. In this case, the number of Ramon ground state, again, order K squared. And so on. And this is also, this is S7 actually. So this is for this is 7. This is for the spin 7 manifold. And we have computed the number of Ramon ground state or number of perturbations. And also there are order K squared. So increases.
Sorry.
Yes.
I thought when these constructions looked like K was restricted to small values, because I don't think we couldn't have the SU3 inside the numerator.
Actually, what happens is that the rest is embedded. Not so. For instance, the way things are embedded is, in this case, so we want the denominator to be embedded into that. So this part is embedded in here, and this part is embedded in there. So K is common. So in that sense, there is no condition.
So yeah. You're actually getting
series of models, yes. And this embedding has to be checked independently, sort of individually. So this is more or less what we have done so far. So it seems that, well, the exact meaning of K is not quite clear. It seems that the best chance to make a contact with classical geometry is to have minimum number, probably K is equal to 0 or 1. Very small K is presumably the best chance of having a good contact with classical geometry. When K is very small, the number of perturbations is very small. And in particular, we want to identify this perturbation which eliminates the singularity and turn the singularity into a certain bolt. We haven't been able to identify the bolt, this construction yet. We have to do the deep brain boundary state analysis, and et cetera. We have to do such a thing, which we haven't started yet. So we haven't made such an indication. So the best chance is probably to have small k corresponds to have a better correspondence to the classical result. If you go to large k, there are many lots of perturbations, which seems unlikely to have a geometrical counterpart. One comment is the following. In the case of n is equal to 2, Calabi-Yau, the perturbation operators, the so-called chiral fields, form chiral ring. The chiral ring fields are under OPE, don't generate any singularities. So they mutually commute each other. So it's possible to apply different perturbations at the same time, in a different direction at the same time. So, right? But in this case, the situation is different, as it turns out. And we don't quite understand what that means. But here, in any case, we just enumerate all possible Ramon ground states. Given the model, we enumerate all possible Ramon ground states that corresponds to perturbations. So we have a certain number of operators which perturb the system. But they don't commute, as it turns out. They're just different fields, and they have non-trivial singularities in OPE, operator product expansion. In the case of n is equal to 2, there was a U1 charge. And the addition of the U1 charge, you know, et cetera, made things commuting. But in the case of n is equal to 1, they don't commute. So the situation seems like this. So here, I'm sitting at the singular situation. Then I want to perturb one direction. Then I can perturb another direction. So as many as there are Ramon ground state. But I cannot have a sort of continuous ways to go. So it seems like I have a kind of branched structure. And something like this actually has been noticed also classically. And I don't know whether our observation matches with that classical sort of observation. For instance, in the work I have just mentioned at the beginning, is the work by Joyce. And he had looked at this T7 divided by a certain discrete group, Obifort constructions. And he wanted to remove the singularities. And sometimes he found that there are many ways to remove the singularities and get the different topological manifold, the different topology. It's like a conifold. You know, conifold singularity can be removed in different ways. You can sort of inflate S2 or inflate S3, resolve conifold or deformed conifold, different way of deformations. And in the case of n is equal to 2, you know, it's like a conifold situation. We have a kind of mirror symmetry, you know, A cycles and B cycles, etc. So there is such a language. But n is equal to 1, there is no such mirror type of language. Instead, all of these seem to be on the same footing. So this may be something like a conifold transition, but it's different from n is equal to 2 situation, but we have all the different directions are on the same footing, and it's not, you know, sort of paired like in the case of mirror symmetry. And in the model studied by Joyce, the interesting observation was that there are many ways to resolve the singularities, but it turns out B2 plus B3, the number 2 cycles plus number 3 cycles, the sum is the same. So different ways of resolving a singularity, you get a different B2 and different B3. But the sum is the same. So it looked like if you go to different way of resolving, one two cycles is flipped into 1-3 cycles and keep doing something like that. And the structure we are finding here seems a little bit like that. Although the model is different, here we are looking at this cone construction, and his model is more sort of compact type. So it's a different model, but may have some similarities. So I think I'm finished. Thank you very much. Yes.
Do the number of Marshall operators match the geometry for low k?
Yes, very small k. K is equal to zero. It does. What you expect. So our conjecture is k is equal to zero may corresponds to the non-classical geometry. Right, but in any case, this is some sort of deformed quantum deformed geometry. So there may not be exact correspondence, but sort of low k seems to mimic the classical geometrical situations.
If you look for some holographic
K may possibly be the number of, I don't know, NS5 or NP5, whatever. Yes, that's still speculation. I think we don't know. Here, actually, I'm restricting myself to this particular value of the river momentum. And this is also one of our conjecture. And there's no other perturbation operator with other value of the river momentum. And this is another assumption or conjecture or whatever. This is the same.